This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, my name is Alex and this is Lunchbox Radio. Now, before we jump into the episode this week, I want to encourage everybody to go listen to the episode from last week. As always, this time it was about the Apothecary Diaries. And if you're just joining the podcast, if you're just starting to listen to the podcast and this was the first episode that you chose, you might want to go and listen to the previous one first, because that's more in the wheelhouse of what this podcast is kind of like. Because this week we're going to be doing something that I do just about every season once enough of the season has gotten going. And that's my watch list, my like couple shows that I think I'm probably going to stick with throughout the current season of anime. This has gone very well sometimes, this has gone very badly sometimes. Mostly depending on like whether or not the show holds me for the whole of it. So I've got three shows that I want to share with you guys. So let's jump in with those. So I'm going to do something odd with the shows this time, in that I'm going to actually be bring up the show, and I'm going to have I give us a little breakdown of its production. Of its production stats, which will just give you an idea of like who's making the show and like all that fun jazz. I haven't done this before because that stuff is usually scattered over a couple different locations, and it's never super easy to like focus on what I want to focus on at one point and then shift to another place. Which is why I actually came up with the AI, with the AI technically, but ChatGPT called Fujoshi Sensei, and that ChatGPT customization basically gathers all of the production info from all over the places where it is and just puts it in front of me, which is really nice. And then I use a fun voice interpolation thing to, like, get it to talk to us. So, look forward to that for each show that I talk about. I'm not necessarily going to call it out, but I will, but you'll know it's happening, because it'll be a lady instead of me, talking. But, on that note, let's jump into the first show I want to talk about, which is, so I've got three shows here, and I'm going to go what I'm going to call new, old, new, because there's one that's an old show that's being remade, and then the other two that I'm going to talk about are new. The other thing is this podcast is going to go as long as it goes. It kind of can't go any longer without it being like a full exploration of these three shows. And if you want an exploration of these three shows, one of them I've already covered because, like I said, it's a remake. But on that note, the first show I want to cover is a little show that's actually over on High Dive, not Crunchyroll, called Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night.
Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night is an original anime television series produced by Doga Kobo to commemorate its 50th anniversary. The series is directed by Ryohei Takeshita and features a vibrant urban atmosphere set in the nightlife of Shibuya, Japan. The story follows four young women, each with unique artistic ambitions, who form an anonymous artist group called Jili. The main characters include a former idol, a VTuber, a traumatized illustrator, and a talented musician.
Now, this show stuck with me because its description sounded an awful lot like a manga that I read a while ago called After Hours. And if you're not familiar with After Hours, After Hours follows these two women, I believe they're in their 20s. These two women who essentially they hook up and then they kind of like link up in terms of like doing these almost audiovisual performance piece things constantly. Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night feels like that, but less. Well, not less gay, but like, it's not like there's no I slept with the girl before this happened. And it's this really from the first, and I'm only going to be talking about the first episode that I watched on each of them, so I don't get into spoilers, but for the first episode, this really great layering of the show's understanding of the specific location in Tokyo that's taking place, that, like, they have this understanding of, like, guerrilla idol performances, and kind of the vibe of the neighborhood. I think it takes place in Shibuya specifically. It has a great understanding of the vibe of Shibuya and like Shibuya back alleys and what it's like to actually kind of probably live in that area. Because as somebody who's been to Shibuya, it's not necessarily like And this isn't just in Tokyo, but it's in many cities. In cities, you get this real sense of, like, this is a place where, like, business happens, where, like, stuff is produced, stuff is bought, stuff is sold. And then you get this sense of a neighborhood where, like, people live. And it's very true in Tokyo, but the thing about cities that is not true. The thing about countries that is not true in America is you can kind of, in like Tokyo, you just kind of live where you fit. If that makes any sense. You can get an apartment anywhere. It's just about where you want to live and how much you want to spend to do that. At least if you're a actual Japanese resident. Foreigners is a little different because racism and nonsense. But anyway, so like a thing people forget from looking at the outside, it's like Shibuya has a lived-in-ness to it. Shibuya has this like, has a local neighborhood that like comes together and does things. And this show instantly understands that and instantly like uses that as part of its story. Plus it's got the whole like callback to being a story that's feel very similar to After Hours, and it's just it's a cool thing, and it's really, really gorgeously produced, too. So that is what I'm going to be looking for, one of the things I'm going to be watching. The next thing that I want to talk about is a remake, and that show is actually Spice and Wolf.
The 2024 remake of Spice and Wolf is being produced by the animation studio Shuka. This remake was announced as part of the celebration of the 15th anniversary of the original anime adaptation. Shuka is known for working on series like Durarara and Natsumi's Book of Friends. The remake aims to bring new life to the beloved story of Kraft, Lawrence, and Holo, likely with updated animation and possibly new interpretations of the characters and story elements, staying faithful to Isuna Hasakura's original light novel series. There's quite a bit of anticipation surrounding how the new adaptation will handle the unique blend of economics, romance, and historical fantasy that made the original series so popular.
And if you want to hear my thoughts on Spice and Wolf, kind of as a celebration of this show, of this version of Spice and Wolf being announced, I talked about Spice and Wolf way back in this very podcast. You can, if you can search the podcast's releases, you'll see that there is a podcast I did on Spice and Wolf. So I talked about this story, this world before. But the reasons why they remake things in the way they're remaking Spice and Wolf now, or in the way that they've remade something like Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, is that oftentimes the adaptations leave things out and like mess with the story structure in ways that oftentimes you'll never even notice. If you hadn't read the manga of Fullmetal Alchemist, and you were watching not Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, but the original 2004 Fullmetal Alchemist thing, you probably wouldn't know anything was up. But when you watch Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood, after a certain point, there's this, and even before that certain point, but definitely after a certain point, there's a deviation that makes you understand, like, oh, they left out a lot in that first series. And that first series, the first Fullmetal Alchemist series, is not bad. The same is true of the original Spice and Wolf series. That show is really good. The reason why old Taku like me kind of don't shut up about that show oftentimes is because it's really good. But it also had stuff left out of it. From what I understand, it had a whole storyline left out of it. But even in the earlier, scenes, you get this, there's this clear understanding that, like, this is a different thing. They treat things differently. The good thing about remaking a show, in addition to being able to do the original property more justice, is you get a second bite at the apple, so to speak, in terms of the production, in terms of the shot composition, all that stuff. And what's really interesting here is they got tons of money. They got a lot more money for this adaptation than they did for the last one, because now it's a legacy product. Now Spice and Wolf is like a proven thing. It has a big fan base, and like, it's like a core thing for lots of otaku, especially my age. There'll be lots of otaku my age watching this. I know for a fact that Cosplay Fiend is watching this. But the interesting thing is, so much of the original, like, cast and production has come back for this one. And yes, I believe there's a new animation studio, I think, but it's still, people are taking the chance to, like, oh, this thing that we got kind of wrong the first time, let's do it right this time. And it's a really good show. It's a really smart show. It's a show that gets you to watch it. And the same is kind of true of all the shows that I'm talking, of all three shows that I'm going to cover here. All three of these shows make you watch them, and that's an important thing to me. I think the most a show can do, is a television program or a movie or anything can do, is to make you watch it, make you sit there and focus your attention on it. Essentially, be worth the time you're spending with it to, you know, watch the damn thing. And on that note, so I'll be watching Jellyfish Can't Swim in the Night and Spice and Wolf, Merchant Meets the Wise Wolf, which is the remake name in the way that you get Full Metal Alchemist and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, and how do you tell them apart? One Brotherhood, that's the one you want to watch. In this case, it's going to be Spice and Wolf, Merchant Meets the Wise Wolf is the one you'll want to watch. And that's coming out week to week. I've been enjoying that. And then that brings us to our last piece, the second new in this trifecta. And that's a show that's been really hyped, and I'm really interested to see where it goes, because I kind of fell off the manga, which I know a lot of people find sacrilegious, because it's a very popular, very well-loved manga. But that's a show called Kaiju Number 8.
Production IG is producing the 2024 anime adaptation of Kaiju Nova 8. Studio Kara is contributing by handling the kaiju designs and artworks. This collaboration between the studios promises to deliver a high-quality visual experience fitting for the dynamic and detailed world of Kaiju No 8.
Now, I have this weird habit as a old otaku whose brain is tuned to, in whatever way it is, that I oftentimes will read something like 6 weeks before it's popular. And I know it sounds weird, but like, I read Fire Force on vacation in Italy, largely one time. And then like, the next thing I knew, Fire Force was like exploding. And I'm not taking credit for like predicting popularity of things, but I tend to like catch on right before the mass of the universe catches on, oftentimes. And when I'm reading things, oftentimes I'll read them, I'll be like, I bet if this goes wide, it just gets an anime. I said that about Fire Force, and like, sure enough, one was announced. And I also said that about Kaiju Number 8. And the weird thing with Kaiju Number 8 is I don't think it would get an anime before we had things like Chainsaw Man, like Hell's Paradise, before we had the dark trifecta of anime, which is what they call the, like, it's Chainsaw Man, Hell's Paradise, and there's one other one. And JJK. Those are considered to be like the dark trio of manga that, like, in a lot of ways, opened the doors for something with Kaiju Number 8's styling and influences and stuff like that. But what's also really interesting about Kaiju Number 8 is that it just doesn't, it's not concerned with following teenagers. It has this full awareness. And it's not like manga is new to not following teenagers. There's all kinds of manga that's devoted to older protagonists on both sides of the gender gap. But the difference here is that, like, it pulls that like older protagonist down from seinen. And says, no, like, this kind of character can have a shonen power story. And so when you meet the main character, and I'm not spoiling anything here, if you've seen the first episode, which you can go watch on Crunchyroll now. What's really nice about this show being so lauded and so hyped up is that it's actually getting a simultaneous English subbed and English dubbed release on the day it comes out, which is fantastic. But the thing about Kaiju Number 8 is that it does have characters who are just older. Like, the young characters are in their 20s. That's not the old characters in this show. The main character is 32. The main character is 2 years younger than me. Like, he's he's got a full-time job. And the show, the thing that struck me, the thing, and that's actually the thing that got me to read it initially when I heard, when I started looking into it, I'm like, oh, I should probably, that sounds really interesting. I want to read this. Because the show starts with this character who is just kind of a failure. And I don't mean that, like, begrudgingly. Like, I mean, like, Kafka isn't... Kafka didn't achieve his dreams, but the show is very aware that life goes on after that. Like, you don't get to just stop doing everything until you achieve your dreams. You still have to, like, live, eat, pay rent, all this shit. And it's nice to see a show be like, you know, if you don't make your dreams happen, you still have to get up and go to work in the morning. Like, you still have to do something with your life. And there's certainly a sadness to that kind of, like, seeing that happen to a character. But there's also a kind of realistic understanding to it, too. And because it's a Shonen Jump property, of course it's going to, like, figure out its way into making him a Shonen action hero, and it does. But the show is very aware that, like, he's behind the eight ball. He's on his back foot. And it makes... So I've... As a lot of people listening to this probably do, I listen to Otakus Anonymous. And, like, they make me feel old. For one key reason, and it's the way they talk about anime. And they were both always so jazzed that, like, it's an older protagonist that's, and Danny Mata on there was like, this dude's older than me, that rocked, like, it rules to, like, be seeing a story by that's not about a fucking 15-year-old. But what they miss in just, like, the kind of, like, popularity scaled brain of YouTubers is that this show isn't just about a 32-year-old. It's about a listless 32-year-old who didn't make it, who didn't do the thing, who didn't achieve the thing he wanted to do by his 30s. And that's got a real connotation in not just Japan, but increasingly in more of the world. As somebody who is in his 30s, who is on his second career because his first career just wasn't doing it for me. It became less of a me thing and more of a, this is how it's going to be. I don't want to be doing this thing. And that's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to, like, let go of. Not necessarily let go of a dream, but, like, have the realization that, like, it's not going to kill me to not achieve this. Now, this is also coming from somebody who re-engineered the world so he could go re-engineer his financial universe so he could go to Japan before he was 35, starting at the tender age of, like, when I was 33 or something. But, still, like, those, that as a concept is just a really great starting point. Now, I've read not that far along in the manga, but far enough along in the manga to know that that kind of vibe does stay stay there for a decent amount of time. And it's just, it's interesting. It's interesting to see. It's interesting to see some main character who's really getting a second shot, who doesn't feel like the world is engineering itself for him to succeed. If that makes any sense. And of course it is, because that's the way storytelling works. But in good storytelling, it doesn't feel like that ever. And the other weird thing is that it's got an opening and ending by two American bands, including the ending by One Republic, which I know people hate, but I dig the vibes of that ending. Kind of, it could be a soft J-pop song and it would have the same effect. But in any case, that's really where I'm gonna, I know this is a lot shorter than I usually go, but that's really where I'm gonna stop today. I hope you guys liked the episode. And if, once again, this is your first time listening, definitely go back and listen to, just pick another episode. It doesn't necessarily have to be the Apothecary Diaries, but you can pick another episode that I've worked on, that I've put out, and listen to that, and it will give you a much better vibe for what I'm doing here. But on that note, I've been Alex, this has been Lunchbox Radio, and I will talk to you later.